Economic Development to order. We're a little late starting today, and we have some testimony, so I want to get started on, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2011. And I believe we have Jim Sapanic here, Bruce Anderson, and Representative Greg Smith. Would you guys like to come forward and tell us about this bill? Welcome.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Very nice to be with you. My name is Jim Zupancic. I am a partner at the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. And I'm here today in the capacity as the chair of the speaker's job creation work group that was organized specifically for the purpose of assimilating and synthesizing the plethora of economic development proposals that have evolved over a period of months from very well-meaning trade groups and organizations, all focused on an agenda to try to do something in the state to revitalize our economy. I also come with some experience that I'll allude to in a moment with regard to working with the Office of Economic Development in that department over a period of about 12 or 13 years, and would be happy to share some of my experience in working with companies that have come to the state, why they've come to the state, what they found to be successful and what they haven't. First of all, I will... We'd just like to bring to your attention that this whole issue of focusing the Department of Economic Development found itself as a number one or among the top few issues of many of the reports that were produced by the business community. And I think that this underscores the business community's interest in having a state agency that is primarily responsible in focusing on economic development of the state. People said it in different ways, but essentially is if everybody's responsible for doing it, then nobody's responsible for doing it. And the business community needs some agency to carry the water on economic development. And in that regard, there has been an evolution of OED, OEDD, or OECD, whatever it's called now, such that it was very successful in the 1990s, and the business community observed that the focus on that department was lost as it began to consider itself being more interested in sustainability rather than development, and consequently the business community as a whole has resoundingly said that needs to be refocused. Now, who is charged with refocusing the department? Certainly the governor in his executive capacity, but also the legislature in saying to the department, we really need you to focus in on what will be effective. So let me use that as a transition then to tell you something briefly about the impact that this organization can have on economic development. I personally, in our firm, worked with many companies coming into this state in the 1990s, particularly semiconductor firms, and they came here because of the macroeconomic impact of the semiconductor industry expanding. And Oregon was very, very interesting and appealing to them. What they were looking for was some focal point, some ombudsman, some state agency to help them work their way through the process. Because remember, for companies that are coming from other states or, worse yet, from other countries, they don't understand our processes. They don't understand land use processes. They don't understand permitting processes. And it's quite intimidating to them. So they marshal together experts in the fields of engineering and law. But they need to have somebody in the government that is willing to step forward and say, we will help make this happen. And back in the 1990s, OEDD did an absolutely fantastic job. In fact, so fantastic that they were recognized, I think, in 1995 as being the premier economic development agency in the entire world. They received an award in London. And the reason that they were recognized as such, because they were very proactive in working with these companies to make it happen, to work it through the land use processes and permitting. And that's why companies that we represented, such as Toshiba and Komatsu and Tokyo Electron and others, that's why they located here in Oregon, because there was an agency willing to do the work to make that happen. They're looking for certainty and they're looking for speed. They're not looking for something which is easy, but they have to have certainty and speed, because if they're in the business, for example, of making widgets, they cannot spend their time and energy working through processes that may cause them to miss their market window. And that's where a state agency can be of a great deal of help. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have after these presentations concerning some of the pragmatics of bringing these companies to the state. But it's clear to me that our business community and our state at large is calling for leadership. It's calling for leadership from this department, and I think the legislature can play a very important and valiant role in saying we need you to focus and we need you to get the job done, because if you don't do it, nobody's going to do it, and we need that effort. So with that, I will turn the microphone over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Bruce Anderson, Legislative Director to House Speaker Karen Minnis. Mr. Zupanczyk has pretty well stated what kind of where we got here. This is an idea that his job creation work group identified after looking at several business organizations' proposals and plans related to economic development in this state. And I think it's noteworthy just to note a few of those at this point. One area that this came from was the Oregon Business Plan, a very well put together document, very thorough. I think you're all probably familiar with that. But they one of their items specifically talked about refocusing economic development in the state, talking about returning the department to its role in business retention, expansion, and recruitment, among other things, assigning the department and the Economic and Development Community Development Commission to be advocates for measures to enhance business competitiveness, working with the department, working with the governor to systematically build relationships with existing and emerging industry clusters and their associations to address key issues, and supporting technology as a catalyst for economic growth, particularly recommendations by OCED. Another area, the New Economy Coalition talked about reorganizing the department to support new technologies, new technology companies. OCED itself has discussed about promoting creation, dissemination, and commercialization of ideas through the department, and as well as other areas like the State Board of Higher Education and OHSU. Oregon Business Association talked about the need to allocate a portion of the department's resources toward the development and attraction of sustainable enterprises. There was also a review done by another organization, the National Association of State Development Agencies. The report was issued, I believe, last fall, or about December 2002, I think, talking about the department having a more clearly defined mission. Or if there are to be multiple missions, that the missions and goals be more clearly prioritized. Associated Oregon Industries also talked about redirecting the department to emphasize economic development versus community development. There are several other organizations, I'm sure, that have talked about it as well. Those are the ones I'll highlight in my testimony here. Looking at the department itself, it was a huge sign, I believe, of the governor's commitment to economic development in this state when he appointed Marty Brantley to head up the department. Mr. Brantley has made some great inroads in changing things at the department and getting things moving forward. That's absolutely awesome. It's he's brought the right perspective, I think, from his private sector experience to that in that leadership role, and has been an excellent leader. And we look forward to his continued work at the department. While things are working their way out in the department's budget in this process, the legislative process, to address concerns I think expressed by businesses and business organizations, and some, I think what we're calling for in the Dash 1 amendments that should be before you, I think dovetail with that. And it only makes sense that we establish in statute some level of focus of the department on business retention, expansion, and recruitment, and that's what we're seeking to do through these amendments. And as I said, I think that dovetails well with their vital role, important role in community development as well to support these areas. The last time a major change, if I'm not mistaken, was made to the department was in 1999 through Senate Bill 1128. And while that was important, it's been fairly apparent from what the business community has said, as Mr. Zupanczyk outlined, there needs to be more emphasis on keeping the businesses we have, helping them to expand, and recruiting more companies to come to Oregon. There are some other bills, as you all are, I'm sure, well aware of, such as Senate Bill 467 and House Bill 2269. And I believe that what we're proposing here in the Dash 1 amendments fit well with where things are right now with the department and getting things to work better. And I'd like to think that the amendments that are being proposed would do that. Also, one other point to emphasize in the proposal here, and that is strengthening the regions and the regional offices is called for in the amendments, I believe, will better coordinate services to business. It will better engage local communities in setting economic development priorities in their area. And ultimately, coordinating economic development and looking at what each area wants can have a better buy-in by local communities, focusing attention on our economic situation and turning around Oregon's economy. Again, I think the main goals of HB 2011, as proposed in the amendments, is retention, expansion, and recruitment of business by the department. We've heard that needs to be a priority in this state. Let me also emphasize or talk about for one moment the effort by the Department of Community Development. Again, that's tremendously important. I think developing and enhancing the infrastructure in our communities is vital to keeping, expanding, and recruiting new business in Oregon. But at some point, I think we need to look at how things are moving along and how the efforts are at getting to what should be a main priority of getting business and keeping what we have here. So I think that's why we're just seeking to elevate that focus, I guess, on behalf of the department to doing that. Now, at this point, Madam Chair, I would be glad to go through the amendments, if you'd like, in rather short order. I know there are other people here to testify, so I can...
Well, does Representative Smith want to go ahead and testify?
This might be an appropriate point for Representative Smith.
And then we'll do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Smith. Vice Chair, he's having trouble telling you.
Gallegos.
I apologize.
We've been struggling with that all session.
You know how to pronounce it until you try to read it, and then it trips you up. Members of the committee.
Thank you. Why?
For the record, I'm State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of representing District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Morrow, and Umatilla County. I want to share with you a little bit about my professional background. About 15 years ago, I came out of graduate school at Portland State University, broke with a lot of student loans and didn't quite know what to do, and I was offered a job as a project development specialist for a company called Greater Eastern Oregon Development Corporation. This was a 501c4 community development corporation that had a service area of about 8 counties. And in that capacity, I had the opportunity to really get a hands-on, ground-level view of economic development. In my capacity, I did everything from work with local communities to put together community development block grant applications to assisting as a staff member to what was then called the Regional Strategies Program. I had the distinct pleasure of also getting to put together all the reports that were turned into the state of Oregon as a result of that program. I also operated or assisted in the operation at that point in time on 504 SBA loans, EDA revolving loan fund loans, and a little later into the experience, intermediary relending program loans. In addition, I've had experience with community financing in terms of trying to bring private sector and public sector folks together. I've had an opportunity to travel to 34 countries and five continents doing egg marketing as a result of receiving an egg marketing grant from the state of Oregon as a then employee of the Port of Morrow. I've worked with companies that have assets. Gosh, I don't know how big's Portland General Electric, all the way down to little companies that are starting out on a shoestring with $5,000. I've worked with value-added food processing companies. I've worked with timber companies. I've worked high-tech. I've seen a lot in 15 years, and so I feel very well qualified to come and speak with you this afternoon about the bill and the amendments before you. I want you to know I truly appreciate the leadership of Speaker Minnison in allowing this issue to come forward, and I appreciate the effort of Mr. Zupanczyk and Mr. Anderson. They truly are leaders and pioneers and are really trying to move the state forward in a manner that I believe makes sense. I want to take a moment and remind this committee just what are the programs and services currently offered by the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And many of these programs you probably already know about, but I just want to take a moment and reiterate what we have as tools in our toolbox. The state of Oregon, in its Economic and Community Development Department, has the Business Retention Services. We have Expansion and Recruitment Assistance. We have Industry Sector Outreach and Targeted Training Funds. We have International Trade Assistance. We have the Oregon Marketing Plan. We have very successful small business development centers. We have small business specialized providers in which private contracts are provided. We have what's called a strategic reserve fund. In finance programs, we have the Oregon Business Development Fund. We have the Oregon Capital Access Program. We have the Oregon Credit Enhancement Fund. We have the Oregon Entrepreneurial Development Loan Fund. We have the Oregon Industrial Development Bond Program. We have Old Growth Diversification Funds. We have the Oregon Downtown Development Association. We have Rural Development Initiatives. We have Community Development Block Grant Programs. We have the Oregon Bond Bank. We have the Oregon Port Revolving Loan Fund. We have the Regional Rural Investment Fund. We have the Safe Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. Special Public Works Fund. Waste and Wastewater Fund. We have Electric Commerce Zones, and we have Enterprise Zones. We have the Strategic Investment Program, and we have Vertical Housing Zones. That's the list that we have within the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. This does not include the list of programs that are provided by the Employment Department, Housing and Community Services, or many other of our partners. The reason I bring this list forward to you is to let you know that we do have a couple tools in the toolbox. But some of these tools right now are a little dull, probably not as sharp as they ought to be. And I think some folks could contend that around the state, we don't have the right people to swing the hammer, shall you say, or to use the tools that we have in the toolbox. The reason I appreciate the amendments to 2011 is because this is an effort to take these tools and to sharpen them up and to use them, and to use them at the local level in communities that are naturally put together with natural commonalities of interest. If you look at point number two, it talks about creating and strengthening regional offices. Right now, the state of Oregon is very well served by regional development officers. But the fact of the matter is, there's only one regional development officer representing the department in each of the regions. And most often, they operate out of their car or they operate out of a closet size office, if you will. And when a company looks to locate at any part of the state of Oregon, this is the one person that is turned to represent the state and to represent the many, many programs and services that were mentioned before. What's exciting about strengthening the regional offices is there's an opportunity to bring all these partners together into one location as a region sees fit to reach out and meet the needs of a business or a community that needs assistance. And let me give an example, if that's okay. Sure. When a business comes into a community and says, we're looking to locate, the first thing that happens is, traditionally, the Chamber of Commerce or the local economic development professional sticks out their hand and says, welcome, we'll do whatever we can to help you. And traditionally, within that first meeting, there's a real spirit of cooperation and excitement. And there's lots of understandings that are made and had. But then when you get down to the details of how you're going to carry it out, the people who need to be at the table are not always there. And I have to tell you from my own experience, nothing is worse than trying to negotiate a deal with a company when you know they can sign on the bottom line and there's no one there from the state who has the authority to say, yeah, we can make this happen. Part of what these amendments are going to do is going to provide some power, some authority to these local regional boards to allow them to make the decisions to move forward. If you could visualize a regional office that had representation from the Small Business Development Center and from the state's business finance programs, representatives who knew how to operate the Community Development Block Grant Program or the Special Public Works Program, folks who understood tourism, or perhaps your region isn't tourism-oriented, maybe it's agriculturally oriented. Having a representative there who understood that region, knew the programs and services, knew how to work through the process. Imagine having an office where you could get a decision on a DEQ or an LCDC issue, or having someone from ODOT or higher education that could point you in the right direction with nothing more than a phone call to move something forward. Just imagine how responsive that would be to a business who's looking at coming to Oregon. You've got other partners out there, water resources, the employment department, workforce, community colleges. There's a tremendous opportunity through the economic ambassadors that we're trying to develop and identify that bring all these folks together. Part of what appeals to me about this concept is the fact, let's say a small business, 20, 30 employees, is looking to grow and to hire 5 or 6 more employees. And they come and they talk to the chamber. The chamber says, we have the person for you. They can go directly to a person who can put them right in touch with the resources they need. And perhaps the first step is to the private lender, saying, well, we would like to help you, but the first step needs to be for you to go talk with your bank. Well, the person's taken to the bank or shown, you know, the list of banks that are available to them in this community. And then perhaps there's a gap in the financing. Perhaps the bank is only willing to do 70% loan to value. Well, at that point in time, a person at the regional office could step up and have authority to try and move a deal forward to assist in getting that gap financing put together. maybe the person's not quite ready for financing. At that point in time, the private lender and the business finance folks could work with the Small Business Development Center to perhaps strengthen the business plan, work on some cash flow projections, maybe deal with some collateral issues, and then come back through. There's a tremendous opportunity to really enhance the tools we have, and I think that's what House Bill 2011 and the amendments do. Some of this is being done right now through the Community Solutions team process, but we think it could be strengthened. Each community is going to have a different need. In Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas County, their needs and the personnel they're going to need as part of their regional office would be very, very different than, say, a regional office down in southern Oregon or in rural eastern Oregon. So that's kind of the beauty of what we're talking about here. Each regional office could create that team of personnel that they need to create jobs and to provide the assistance to the private sector. That's why I'm here today. I think this has tremendous merit. There's a tremendous amount of detail that needs to be worked through. The Oregon Economic and Community Development Department are a tremendous resource for the state of Oregon. It's our job to help set the policy and set the direction, and I compliment these gentlemen for trying to make sure we are on the right course. Thank you, Chair Smith.
Oh, thank you, Representative. Are there any questions? Did you want to leave? I mean,
I'd be interested in staying.
No. Okay. Oh, you would. Great. I just know time constraints. Usually the legislature.
That happens in every committee.
Does it?
I'm teasing.
No. Any questions before we proceed? And I think it would be a good idea, Bruce, if you did go through the amendments. So, any questions? Sure. Representative Pat.
Thank you. I do appreciate what you are trying to do and the spirit of this. I do have a question on the on Section 5. It guess seeks to give some superpowers to the governor, it looks like anyway. Maybe clear this up, but it looks like the governor may issue an executive order that is not subject to ORS chapters, 195, 96, 97, 215, 227, 268. Does that mean that if the governor finds a project that he likes and issues an executive order, that these laws, which are land use laws, environmental regulations, zoning laws, would not apply to what the governor decides should be developed?
If I might address that, Madam Chair and Representative Haas. What you're hitting on are project, what we're calling projects vital to the economic well-being of the state. Those are projects, as it, in the setup to Section 5 on page 7, would establish what those are, what threshold they have to attain in order to have that designation given. And one of the main ones, one of the main factors is, first off, in sub A there, the project would result in the creation of at least 100 jobs during the first year of operation, or generate at least 500 jobs during the construction phase of the project. And actually, we would be asking that number 100 be changed to 250. And then also that there would be those projects need to somehow match, or that needs to be coordinated with what the regions have identified as their economic development priorities. The thought here is that if a company has a project that is going to impact our economy to that degree, that perhaps, and this is a pure policy issue that the legislature would be addressing here, obviously, that maybe they ought to be somehow that project could be expedited through. I mean, given the resulting impact on the economy that a project like that would have, that perhaps we ought to look at designating that in some special manner. So that can be expedited along and provide some level of certainty to a company that's going to invest that. I mean, make that level of investment in our state. And that could be either a new business coming to the state or expanding an existing one. And certainly that, I mean, there is you know, as you described it, there is it is giving the governor the ability to issue an executive order to make this type of a project move forward. I would point out, though, that while we're allowing the governor to do that, that it's important, I think, to emphasize that the project needs to be coordinated somehow with the locally established economic development priorities. There's also a comment period that would be that's addressed in the bill, allowing local governments and individuals to provide input on that, and I believe an instruction in the bill to the department to make consideration for those comments. But also, the governor, in his executive order, could set up some parameters in for this project, and you'll have to forgive me. I don't know exactly. I've got this in my notes, but I don't know exactly where this is in the bill. But I do know that it's there. But it the language discusses allowing the governor the ability to impose additional conditions on the project. So that the fancy language that I think we use in the bill is to ameliorate any deleterious effects of the development or construction on individuals who reside within sight or sound of the land or a facility that's constructed under the chapter. So, well, yes, there are some items in that are being affected in our statutes. I would hope that there would be some provision made for so that it works with what's needing to, or what's wanting to take place locally without deleterious impacts on the area.
I'm sure if I may follow up.
I think Representative Smith and Jim Sapansic wanted to comment on that. Do you want to, your next question, or do you want them to?
Well, yeah, I just I went to the business summit in December, and I've gone to the Oregon Business Council's plans. We've all had their agendas here, and never in any of those did I ever see granting this kind of superpower authority to a governor to override zoning laws, land use laws, environmental laws. And Mr. Panzik, you're an attorney. Doesn't this give you some pause, some balance of power questions to put this much power into a governor, particularly in Oregon, to override environmental laws for the sake of a development?
Well, Representative Haas, I would answer the question this way. The competitive environment that we find ourselves in is competing against 50 other states, and I'd like to cite an example for how this plays out. Not that many years ago, there was a company by the name of Sumitomo Citex that wanted to site a plant in Newburgh to the tune of about $1.25 billion. It was going to actually discharge water that was cleaner than the water that was coming in. Because of their manufacturing processes and the cleaning of the water, it was an environmental plus. It was going to provide hundreds of jobs to the community. And from a transportation standpoint, it was wonderful because people that lived in that community could work in that community. The problem that we had was that even though we had a tremendous amount of support within the Newburgh community, the approval processes took well over a year. And they had a market window that they had to meet to be able to develop wafers to serve Intel. At the conclusion of the approval process that went up through Yamhill County, while the SIP was not approved in that particular case, the frustration that was exhibited by that company was illustrated by their response to a telephone call that they got from the state of Arizona. And the state of Arizona said, we'd like you to come here and there will be one-stop permit processing. We will lay out the red carpet for you and we will get the deal done. Now, that company currently resides in the state of Arizona. Arizonans are working there. And I wish that Oregonians were working for that company and that that plant was located in this state. There's the point that you raise is a good one, and there needs to be a balance, but we need to have a vehicle by which we can expedite this process so that these companies can have some degree of certainty and speed, not to the derogation of due process and not to the derogation of the interests of the local citizens and community. But we have to be able to move the process along faster, and I think that's what this is trying to address.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Smith. Representative Hassett, I would add to what these two gentlemen are saying. Part of the intent as well was to have a board that would work with this local regional office to help set the direction for the development of the region. And so each region would be able to determine what is its culture that it's trying to maintain and to try and work within those parameters. And I think that's important, because when you talk economic development, it's not just the state and a company or the private sector and a company, but there's so many other partners out there. And I think it's very important to make sure you include the community and the state, along with the private sector and the company, all together in a decision. And I think that's the intent of what we're trying to do.
Madam Chair and Representative Haas, just one more point I would underscore, and that is if you go to Section 6 of the bill, there is provided an appeal process directly to the state Supreme Court for any project that would be approved under this. There would still be additional review of that, and the Supreme Court could invalidate the governor's order in that regard. I'd like to think that we wouldn't circumvent land use planning laws or somehow impinging upon our environmental quality in any regard in these projects.
I'd like to think that too, if I may, Madam Chair.
Sure.
But the words in this bill say that, and so that's why I just raised that issue.
Thank you. Representative Richardson?
Madam Chair, just to follow up on the comment about Section 6, if you look at Section 6, it says that it's only 21 days to file, and yet it doesn't say that there will be notice given to affected people within those 21 days. It doesn't say who's going to pay or how much the cost would be to bring an action directly to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is not designed to take testimony or evidence, and there's no provision for a special master to be called or something like that. And so while there is a Section 6 form of appeal, it's not really designed to function in its current state.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
Okay.
Go ahead then, I guess.
Okay. Let me get into walking you through the bill. Obviously, you've had some opportunity to look at the bill. But I think there's several important items. I'm not going to go into read anything in this beginning introduction of the bill, so I will let you read that at your leisure rather than bore you with that. But I believe there are several important statements that are made that I think it's helpful to have made. Statements made about where we're at economically and where we can go, where we want to go economically. Section 1 then is basically the beginning and what I think one of the main items that's addressed in this bill, and that is basically the mission of the department. And the Economic and Community Development Commission is directed to develop a mission statement giving highest priority to promoting job development in Oregon through assisting existing companies to expand, assisting existing companies desiring to develop new products, promoting commercialization of technology from our universities and colleges, recruiting businesses and targeted industries to locate to the state, and then also to recommend to the next legislative session ways to modify statute to reflect the priorities there. Section 2 is kind of an interesting section. We thought about the need to get together our economic development-related commissions, the folks that are overseeing our Economic and Community Development Department and other economic development-related commissions, the Transportation Commission, Environmental Quality Commission, Land Conservation and Development, OCED, and the president of the State Board of Higher Education, getting them together to talk about where we're at economically and what can be done to improve the state's economy, and that they would meet quarterly to discuss those issues. We thought where we're at economically is important enough that those folks, if they're not already doing that, that we would have them do that and see what can be done to move our state forward in that regard.
Can we? Representative March has a question.
Actually, as just a point, I would add that perhaps you might want to include somebody from the community colleges and workforce development.
Mm. Oh, good. Thank you.
I would add, Chair Smith, Representative March, this is a work in progress, and there probably are other folks that ought to be included in that. Yeah.
Representative Hine?
Thanks, Madam Chair. My comment was along the same lines. You may want to look at perhaps somebody from the International Trade Commission as well on a similar vein.
Mm. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Jackson?
I was going to say the same thing in that you're lining up all of the heads of various bureaucratic departments, and you want them to do good for private sector growth. And so it might not hurt to have some who are successful in the private sector have something to say, since they're the ones that actually pay payroll.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Bill would make this very bureaucratic if you hang around.
Thank you. Well, appreciate your help. Sections 3 and 4 of the bill is one of the major, I think, changes that's being addressed through the bill here. And that is decentralizing the main office of the department and strengthening the regional offices. Representative Greg Smith addressed that in his comments earlier about that. Sub 2 talks about, Sub 2 begins to talk about what the central office is to do, and In sub 2, we talk about what the central office here in Salem would do, for the main headquarters, if you will, for the department would do. And having oversight over regional offices, tourism, and business recruitment and retention. Also, I would add...
excuse me a minute. We have two comments, I think. Representative March?
Okay. In Section 3, Sub 2, you're going to establish as many regional offices as necessary. I think we might think about a cap on that, because I could think of about 3 or 4 in my county alone.
Chair Smith, yeah. Representative March, I think it's very important to understand that there, in economic development, there's natural communities that involve or evolve. And the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department has a very good grasp of where those natural communities are, along with the financial limitations that the state has. But I think that's an issue that could be addressed.
And then follow up.
Sure.
And then secondly, you mentioned Section 4, Sub 2, central office. I'm very concerned about having the central office assume responsibility for building permits, building enforcement, land use issues, and other regulatory requirements. I mean, if you're going to build a project in the city of Portland that I represent, I'd like to see the city of Portland's building people on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're used to the seismic requirements that we're now building to.
May I help with this?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Smith, Representative March. Part of the discussion on this is been to bring the folks that are directly part of these programs to be part of this office. Let me give you an example. If you're dealing with an access issue, it's very important that you have the right Oregon Department of Transportation official there at the meeting participating. And that goes with this as well. When you're dealing with building permits or building code enforcement, it's very important that you have that person at the table. And I think that's the direction we were trying to head with this, is making sure we have the appropriate personnel.
It doesn't say that, though.
Well, I think what we've heard today, Chair Smith, Representative March, is that this is a bill that is going to need to be amended. We've seen that in multiple places.
Well, it's why I'm putting you on notice.
Thank you.
Well, and if I might also respond there, that's the particular item that you note there in sub B of sub 2 talks about the central office coordinating with the regional offices, but not actually doing the processing of building permits or code enforcement. And again, that's only on projects that are designated as vital to the economic well-being of the state.
Let me clarify the language for mm-hmm. you, Bruce. The central office shall coordinate, by assuming responsibility for building permits. Oh. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
Language.
Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
Chair, gentlemen, I want you to know I think that this is a great step in the right direction, and I'm not against it, but there is things we have to look at as we go along. And the provision that Representative Marsh was just referring to has some real preemption issues for every state and every county, and the sad thing is that that's going to be very difficult to overcome is that there will be a lot of people that will say, I like the idea, but, and then when all is said and done, you're going to end up with nobody playing ball because nobody wants to give up any of their turf, whether it's a building the inspector in Central Point or in Portland or whatever it might be. And yet, in this committee and in the Environment and Land Use Committee, we see over and over again this reoccurring theme that we cannot get anything done because of the regulatory morass that we find ourselves in the state. And so the attempt here, it's sad to admit, but we're trying to deal with a bill that is to do an end run around all of those regulations and hurdles that have developed over the years that prevent an effective way to get a project done. For instance, in a water issue, you may end up having to go through three agencies to get three different permits to deal with water or whether it's wetlands and all these other factors. And so that's what it really appears that we're trying to do here is come up with a way that will break through this logjam and allow something to be done that's meaningful. But it's going to take some real finesse to get this through since you're preempting a whole bunch of other jurisdictions.
Thank you, Chair Smith. Representative Richardson. I think part of what we're trying to do is get the decision makers to the table who can make a decision. When I was first running for office, Judge Laura Pryor out of Gillum County said, Greg, do you know how frustrating it is to know when I sit at the table to negotiate a deal, I can sign on the line, and the person sitting on the other side from the state of Oregon can't do anything? The only authority they have is to say, I'll get back to you, and then the process begins. Well, let me tell you, if you're trying to create jobs in the state of Oregon, and you're dealing with a company that's looking at making a multi-million dollar investment, creating hundreds of family wage jobs, they don't want to hear, we'll get back to you. And then the process starts, and maybe 2-3 years later, you get to the point where you're finally ready to break ground. I think what you're seeing is a first effort to try and deal with that issue. How do we get the decision makers into these regions so they can make a decision? And we're going to need to rework some of this and get to that point, but that's the objective. That's the objective. Not to do an end run, to get the decision makers to the table.
But they won't agree.
I'm sorry. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Richardson. I want to address that issue. And strictly speaking, from a practitioner's standpoint, and also sensitive to this issue that Representative Haas raised with regard to preemption and to due process and having people have a right to appeal certain things. From my perspective, what the customer wants is they want to have certainty and they want to have speed. If the decision is not to approve the project, they just need to know that so that they can move on and go to another place. But if they can, they need to have it resolved, and even so that the appeals are done in a tidy enough way so that they can have certainty, so that they don't turn to lawyers like me and say, are you sure that we can start our plant in the next year? And I have to say, no, I can't guarantee you that because the appeal process could run too. So they need certainty. They also need to have a state agency that's going to run interference for them through a lot of these local processes. And sometimes that means simply picking up the telephone and saying, this is a very important project, can we get this done? At other times, as was mentioned by Representative Smith, it means sitting down at the table and saying, let's get this done. It's the grease that gets things moving sometimes. And it's not that the quagmire is insurmountable. It's that we need to have the people with the authority and the standing to be able to move these things forward. And that's one role that the department can take. And I think that there's amendments, as has been mentioned, that need to be done to this proposed amendment. But the intent is have somebody there or a department that can move these things along.
Thank you. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I was just wondering, thank you, if the Community Solutions effort was, I think, organized to address some of these things. It's not funded as probably appropriately as it should be. I was just wondering if you thought, I mean, I don't want to reinvent the wheel here too many times, but doesn't that get at what you're saying that the need is?
Well, Chair Smith, Representative Haas, I've had the distinct privilege of working with Community Solutions teams. And in a way, yes, the dilemma we're having is your Community Solutions teams do not have the ability to negotiate a deal. And it goes back to, once again, we will get back to you. We will see what we can do. Let's submit an application and let's see what we get back. Companies who are looking at locating in Oregon and creating jobs don't want to hear that. They're not willing to work through that, and more opportunities are lost because of the timing in that process. Now, I'm very fortunate in my area to have a Community Solutions team that works very well together, but the fact is they do not have teeth. They don't have teeth, and if it wasn't for some very tenacious individuals, development in Eastern Oregon would not occur.
If I might comment, Madam Chair, not that I want to get focused too much on the Community Solutions team, but wearing my hat as the chairman of the City of Keyser Planning Commission, I can tell you there's a great deal of frustration with the Community Solutions team. I thought it was an incredibly good idea when that was set up. I believe Governor Kitzhaber set it up. Heck of an idea. Get everybody together. Let's see what we can do to speed things along. One of the problems that we've encountered in our city is the ability of trying to develop an area around the Keyser Baseball Stadium. Everybody, we finally, after 20 years of trying to get that area developed, had a developer step forward to be able to develop that area. He has a very innovative approach in how to do that. Not everybody, of course, agrees with it, but nonetheless, it's an idea and somebody stepped forward. We spent approximately a year in my commission working on that, and we changed it a bit and then moved it forward to the City Council. City Council spent over a year working the plan. We conformed to all statewide planning goals that LCDC has and other important issues. Still, and nonetheless, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but with respect to the Community Solutions team, every partner in that team signed off on that except for one. We had ODOT signed off on it. We were able to get the plan intersection interchange changed and all of the other ones except for DLCD. There was a problem. Perhaps it was more one individual in particular that seemed to be raising the issues, but nonetheless, the process did break down somewhat. Hopefully, I know there's another bill in the process, Senate Bill 467, I think that might address that issue. I hope it would. But I think that's a great process that just needs to be improved on a bit so it can kind of really work out the kinks, I guess you might say, in that. So.
I want to add to what Mr. Anderson was saying. Just imagine being in a meeting in downtown Portland with an international company and being able to have those key members from the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department who represent the international arena there as part of your regional office. So when calls come in and someone says, can we do this? They have the ability and the authority to say, yeah, we can get that done. That's what we're trying to do here.
Thank you. Do you think this is an appropriate time to just take a quick break and let Shelley Perini give her testimony? Because she does have
thank
to leave.
Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah,
okay.
That would
if
be...
you guys don't mind just taking a few minutes. She said she had about 5 minutes. Would that work?
Sure.
And you can stick around, Representative Smith?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shelley, would you like to come up? Thank you for taking the time to come down here today. Oh, thank you. Appreciate the quick switch here. I'll be short and to the point.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd really like to thank the members of the committee and Patty for welcoming me here today. I really appreciate it. For those who don't know me, my name is Shelley Perini. I'm the Economic Development Manager for the City of Gresham. I also represent the surrounding communities of Fairview, Wood Village, and Troutdale under intergovernmental agreements to Partnership for Economic Development. And I also serve as a volunteer vice president for the Oregon Science and Technology Partnership, which is a nonprofit organization which is emerging to develop new knowledge-based industries in the East Metro region, but our global goal is to be able to share that knowledge and resource of attracting and growing these kind of coveted, high-paying knowledge-based jobs with the entire state. So we're kind of using ourselves as guinea pigs, and then we will share our expertise as we grow. But I really came here today to support the amendments to the House Bill 2011, and I know there's still a lot of nuts and bolts that need to be worked out, but I have to tell you, I just came from Welch's, Oregon, at a worldwide conference for semiconductor equipment and materials executives. It was a real privilege to be able to attend that, and what's amazing is how intuitive and how responsive a lot of the components of these amendments are. Because the key to these industries' survival is really on innovation and new product development and support. And it costs millions of dollars to create one new product idea and get it to market. And I heard some wonderful comments, but we're not just competing against 50 other states. We are competing against the world. And there was a huge discussion yesterday on China. Now, we can't control what China's doing. They're doing some great work, and just by the sheer nature of it, the industry and traditional manufacturing is going to be moving in large sums towards that direction. But what we can do is be really sophisticated and at identifying the niches that we are appropriate for and leveraging off our government and university and industry partnerships. And I know there's some technical things, but woven throughout this whole piece is that art of that collaboration between the universities, industries, and the importance of government. I mean, it is no longer, even these very powerful companies who are now quite humble are realizing it's complete collaboration for us to be able to move forward in an economic strength. And there's real hope. I had a real opportunity to spend time talking with a lot of the Oregon-based high-tech companies. And I think there's a real optimism that we will be able to do the right thing. And I shared with them some of the backgrounds of this bill, and they thought this was an excellent step in the right direction. For those who know me, I am an economic ambassador for the East Metro communities. This new position you're trying to create is what I do every day. And I'll tell you, it did create some anxiety that there was an economic facilitator between our building department for a while. I mean, the guys just didn't quite understand why I'd be coming down and being a liaison for local industry. And now, however, it's taken the pressure off of all these other permitting agencies to have one person that industry can now go to collaborate and solve their problems. That doesn't mean I ever address the issues that the building department, I never speak for the building division or the environmental services folks, but I definitely advocate the case of the business person. And I have to tell you, that makes a huge difference to know that there is an advocate out there and that that advocate can bring together the best and brightest minds. And sometimes, well, in the microchip case story, I was at a conference in downtown Portland. They called me and I had 30 minutes to get back from that conference and get our city manager and our mayor in a meeting. But because we had this system in place, they came plus every director in City Hall.
including the fire director. And really, that's what an economic ambassador for the state should be able to do, is to eliminate that bureaucracy, because that was the number one frustration that I heard. And it's not only from the high-tech industry. That just happened to be an opportunity that really leveraged my presentation today because it validated. But it's also coming from the food and beverage processing. If we can really focus on creating, whether you call it a rapid response team or not, but an ambassador program that can eliminate the bureaucracy, and you start taking each layer of government, and the city's doing the same process, the county should be doing this, and the state should be doing this, and you start peeling back that onion as you're helping these businesses through this bureaucratic process, you should also be changing and adjusting policies. And if you do that in a year's time, I mean, just like an onion, it'll be bitter at time, it'll cause a few tears, and it's uncomfortable. But the end result is really powerful. It's amazing. And if we can create an environment that's conducive and that's not filled with bureaucracy, I'll guarantee you when the economy starts coming around, that's what Oregon's chance is. We can't control wars, we can't control China, but we can control our own destiny through creating one of the most business-friendly climates in the United States. And that's really what's going to be our competitive advantage. Knowing that we have to be leveraging off of growing local industry, supporting and nurturing new innovations and ideas for product development, really focusing on growing our own, and then creating an environment that's extremely competitive. So next time they don't say Arizona, of course it'll be Oregon. And so I support the concept and the flavor of where we're trying to go. I work with the Oregon Economic Development Department on a daily basis, and there is a lot of great people down there really trying to do a great job. They are lean and mean and working with really meager resources. And these are just assets that could help them. I do not believe that this is actually creating duplication. I would see this as a welcome reprieve for the city of Gresham to have a partner like myself at the state level who could then do what I do at a city level. And that would just be an enormous asset to industries looking at growing or expanding in this area. So thank you for considering it.
You're hired. Do we have any questions for Shelley?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Bruce, do you want to come back? Jim's and Representative Smith is here?
Yes.
Thank you for doing that. That was very nice.
Any questions?
We normally say we rest our case.
Oh, it sounded like it, didn't it? Did you finish going through the amendments that you wanted to go? Pretty much.
I think pretty much where we're at. You've got the flavor for where we're going here, I think, in this. Subsection 5, let me just kind of wrap up by this.
Okay.
In Section 4, just talks about one of the components that I think Shelley very, very well described with the economic ambassador. This is something that the speaker had some... At a meeting that she was at, had somebody bring forth this notion of having somebody there that can in the government agency that can help facilitate a project moving forward. Shelley described to you, I think, how they handle things in East Multnomah County very well. So I won't really elaborate too much on that. We've already talked about the vital project provision. I won't dwell on that or go into that any further. I think a couple of points I'll just conclude with. Number one, on the SIP program, where there are a few changes that are being suggested there in Section 8, which I believe dovetail with, I think it's House Bill 2299, if I'm not mistaken, with respect to lowering the threshold investment level to qualify from 100 to 25 million. And I think the point that I would want to emphasize there is that we'll be able to qualify, I think, more firms for that designation and perhaps inviting smaller firms rather than just the Intels of the world. There are few companies that can qualify, I don't think, for the $100 million investment level. So perhaps if we lower that threshold down, that might address that. Also, in Section 8, we call for establishing some local workforce training with the community colleges by these businesses.
Madam Chair.
And in Section 12, let me just point out one thing there.
Before we go to questions?
Just one final point I've got to make, actually.
All right.
I'm really done.
Okay.
And that is, while we have this notion that we'd like to have folks that are local in the area hired locally, I was made aware of the fact that there's a little problem with the U.S. Constitution, apparently, on that. So we are going to, I guess that's a basic statement that businesses would be encouraged to hire locally.
Okay.
And employing our folks here at the local level would be a good thing.
Okay.
That's all I'll say.
Thank you. Bruce, in most of this, you're trying to help the businesses along and relieve them of some responsibility, and yet in Section 8, where you talk about the workforce training, you're requiring the business to do that. I would suggest that the community colleges and workforce development folks are the folks that actually do that and have money available for that, and that maybe you ought to take another look at that, because you're saying up above a business firm that will be benefited by eligible projects shall develop the workforce training program, and they may not be the ones that you want having to do that responsibility.
Madam Chair and Representative March, I think what I would like to do, since we've got some other wordsmithing at the very least that needs to be done on some other provisions, one of the points there, I think, is requiring a company that's going to be coming to an area under the SIP program that there be some coordination between their coming to the area and what's taking place in the workforce development training. Perhaps we could address that by asking them to work with the local community college or workforce training providers to develop programs that correlate with their business activities.
Right.
And I think that's the notion that was...
That you were intending
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, yes, sir.
It didn't come out that way.
Yeah. Thank you, though.
Any other comments?
Sure.
Yes.
Are you done with the presentation?
Yes, sir.
I honestly do appreciate the spirit that this has done, and I think we should try to continually work on streamlining our economic development processes, and I think we have been. But I also believe that actions speak louder than words, and to the extent that we can fix our transportation system, fix our crisis that we have in the schools, those are economic development actions that I think speak much more loudly than any kind of rearranging the furniture that we want to do within a state agency. So I do appreciate coming forward with some new ideas, but I also believe that actions speak louder than words.
Okay. Any comments?
Chair Smith, as you folks work through the policy end of this, I would hope that at some point you could charge the Ways and Means Committee to try and determine how would they find the dollars to allocate the necessary positions to these regional offices. The thing I think is very important to understand in economic development is you can have as big a hammer as you want, but if you don't have any nails to hammer in, how can it create no jobs? Thank you, Chair Smith.
Thank you. Follow up? Any questions, comments?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ken Armstrong from the Ports, Oregon Ports, is here. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Ports Group. I wanted to take just a couple minutes before you today, and I recognize very well that this is a work in progress. There's still a lot of work to be done on this. But in reviewing some material that was provided to me Yesterday, it was just some general summary information on the direction of where this bill was going to go. And then in trying to compare that with the actual Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2011, which I haven't thoroughly done yet, I just wanted to raise a couple of issues to make sure that the record reflected that, that you were aware of them, and that we would continue to have discussions about those subjects as the bill moves forward. First, it strikes me that this approach may well have some merits. There are some things that are obviously some problematic that need to be worked through. We want to be at the table to do that. I think I want to make sure we first have on the record the importance of making sure that the local government partners are at the table in coordinating this whole thing. We have been very active with the governor's office, with all of the state agencies that are involved with economic development, with the cities, the counties, the special districts, and of course, from my perspective, the ports, in talking about everything from the 1128 reorganization during 1999 to some of the budget decisions and priorities that get placed for the last couple sessions. And so we want to be part of that discussion, and I'm sure that we will be, and I appreciate the folks that are bringing this bill forward, keeping us in the loop on it, which they have done, and I think we'll be able to bring something constructive to the table. Specifically relative to the 2011-1s, and this is not a comprehensive set of comments, but a couple of things I just want to draw to your attention. In Section 1 of the bill, or of the Dash 1 amendment, down at line 29, we might think about including a new subsection that would be a sub E. It strikes me that a priority for the mission of the Economic Development Commission ought to be to have investing in the development of industrial and commercial infrastructure that supports the Commission's priorities. I think it might be argued that that's inherent in some of those things, but there's nothing wrong with being explicit either. And since that is where our bread is most heavily buttered, is in the investment in that infrastructure, we would advocate for seeing some language in there. Now, I also have to say right off the bat that we are having to keep our powder dry and hold our ultimate opinion in reserve until we see how all this stuff works out. But just as some comments for your consideration, on page 4 of the Dash 1s, line 25, where it refers to the activities of the central office, we might think about adding a sub large capital D, activities related to ports and port development. As I think most of you are aware, there are several programs within the Economic and Community Development Department that deal specifically with ports. We have some federal lobbying activities that involves ports. It goes beyond ports, of course, but dealing with the channel projects and some things like that. We have traditionally in the past had a ports division. I'm not going to go into the ugly history of how we've got to where we were to where we are, but it has been in concert with the ports. But the fact remains that there are some programs that are port specific, that there is a state interest in having a healthy port system, both from a transportation standpoint and from an economic development standpoint, and that's probably something that ought to be considered part of the central office. On page 9, in section 7, we might want to be a little bit more explicit as to how DCBS deals with these projects that are of vital importance to the state. One of the things that struck me in reading the summary that I received yesterday, as I scanned that, there's a clear process for dealing with local projects, locally driven projects, and we think that's very important. There's also a process for dealing with these state projects that are of vital importance. What I'm concerned about is how do those two things fit together? And it may well be that these amendments cover that. But it reminded me in reading this of the process that we have under ODOT with the Area Commissions on Transportation, where it's a locally driven process. for project selection, but there's somewhat of a disconnect between that locally driven process and then what the state's interests are in projects that are of statewide significance. And how you make those things fit together is unclear. I think that's something that needs to be explored and fleshed out a little bit further. That's the nuts and bolts of what I wanted to talk about. I think that this has the potential of doing some good things. We're certainly in agreement with the comments that were made by the proponents of the Dash Ones, especially when Mr. Zipancic referred to the need for certainty and speed on the part of business. From the port's perspective, we couldn't agree more. That's what we need, not only from the standpoint of permitting approvals, but also from getting the dollars out the door. So there's that's a high priority we agree with. We want to work with the bill's proponents and anyone else on this issue. We think that we may be able to get some improved products out there. We're not complaining necessarily with what we have in place right now. There's obviously always room for tweaking, but if there is a move to do something that's marginally or drastically different, we'd like to be at the table, and those are just a few of our thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Armstrong? Thank you.
Thank you.
Doris Penwell?
Hi, I'm Doris Penwell from the Economic and Community Development Department, and I guess I want to be here mostly to answer any questions you may have. After our very brief review of the bill, we saw it late yesterday afternoon, so that's how much information we have about the bill. But I want to say that I'm kind of pleased with the testimony you've received today about how important the things that are dealt with in this bill are to the state of Oregon and how the positive nature of what they're trying to propose. And I guess I would say we would like to work with the group that is developing this proposal so that it could really be a successful activity for the department and for the state and for the governor. After we got the amendment yesterday afternoon, we tried to sit down and from the perspective of the department figure out what are we doing now, what is the focus and the direction in the statute that we already have, and figure out areas that might be worked on to make it a little more positive and come out with an end product that we'll all be happy with. As you know, we have two whole chapters of statute dedicated to the agency and its programs and the direction from the legislature on what we ought to be doing, what our economic strategy is, and what our focus ought to be. So I don't think this bill as yet has dealt with what's already in the statute and tried to eliminate things in there. It's sort of another overlay. So even though I think it is an attempt to be clear on what the focus ought to be, it may muddy the waters a little bit unless some of that review is done so that you can be sure that the agency knows, okay, now what does the legislature want us to do? So just that comment, I think I would say. Marty Brantley is really on board with the direction that is coming out of this proposal, and whether or not there's any legislation per se, he's already moved ahead to try to totally redo our budget after he was became director, and we presented that budget to Ways and Means to refocus what our people do and what our budget and monies are spent on so that we are dealing with economic development issues and particularly in the short run to create jobs. This proposal, unfortunately, doesn't deal with a lot of the things our agency is directed to do and to spend money on. So it deals with about, in terms of our budget, about a third of what we do. And we want to be sure that we still understand what the legislature wants us to do in total. And I think that can be done with some work on the bill.
Okay.
Marty Brantley, I think, would like to be here and to deal with the issue at a later time if you have time on the agenda, and then we can answer questions.
Well, my plan is to have another hearing on this on Monday.
Okay.
So you might ask him if he would like to come.
Good.
Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you. And could you kind of maybe bring an outline of the other duties? I mean, like, I don't see any housing in here. And if you're going to create jobs, we've got to have housing with jobs. And, you know, it's the, all those kinds of things that I know you do that aren't addressed here.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, we actually put together a little bill analysis that I think I gave to the committee earlier that you might have just, and this is really quick and dirty.
Right.
I mean, we had very little time, but tried to go through and figure out, okay, what does this say? What is the direction in the statute now and whatever? There are a few areas where we do really have some a little bit of concern, especially when you get into the regulatory area. The department tries to work either with our regional development officers, or we have a person in the central office that actually works with businesses directly, okay, trying to get them through the regulatory process, but we don't do anything with regulation because the statute, and I think the direction we have is that we're supposed to be an advocate for business, and you can't be an advocate and a regulator at the same time. It's a mixed message, and it just doesn't work. So we don't do that. But what we do is we have people that know all of these sister agencies that have regulation. We know who to talk to, and we know the pitfalls you might get into if you don't have somebody working there. We clearly would love to have more resources and people that could work in this area to make it work better for a lot more businesses. So from that standpoint, this is a very positive discussion.
Thank you.
One more question, if you don't mind.
We've got about 20 minutes.
Okay.
We could all be back on the floor.
And we have you have, the way I read the current statute, you have within your authority to reorganize along these lines already. I mean, that's left up to the director how to organize the office, isn't it? Or is that, am I misreading
the current? Madam Chair, Representative March, yes, we do. In fact, the director is left. There's specific in the bill. I can't remember which section, but it actually, it's section 3. It gives the director authority to organize the department as that director sees fit, based on their budget, of course, and the direction in the statute. So if the statute tells you you need to do something, then you have to figure out what kind of an organization you have to do that job. So, yes, it's left very open. It's not prescriptive at all in the statute as to how we might be organized. There's very little direction that way, and I don't think most state agencies have a lot of direction in the statute as to how you're organized. You know, times change. Today it's one thing. 2 years from now it's another. 4 years ago it was different than it is now. So we want to be flexible and able to respond.
Thank you very much. But maybe between now and Monday, if there's anything else you've had time to go through, you might let us know.
We'll do that.
Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Schweinhardt. Am I saying that right? Thank you.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhardt, Associate Oregon Industries, and for the record, we're the oldest and largest business association in Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today in support of House Bill 2011, its concepts and ideas for reorganizing and redirecting OECDD, and it's strongly supported by our membership. This department is a cornerstone of Oregon's economic development, and we believe a new plan can work effectively. You know, Oregon must be competitive with other states as well as in the international markets. Oregon must develop programs for jobs. Oregon must develop public and private partnerships, which includes working relationships with local leaders if we are to move out of this current economic recession. AOI strongly believes this bill will strengthen those regional offices, expedite the permitting process as well as approvals of projects, and it will establish direct links to development opportunities in the university system. One of the things that's been brought up by previous testimony is that we need to strengthen and expedite the process that businesses go through. One of the problems we have is not so much that opportunities are lost because we don't want them here. A lot of opportunities are lost because we can't make it work. And it goes to other states. And it gets to the point where we have members, when you ask them about their business expanding, they're looking elsewhere first. And we think it's because Oregon is so business unfriendly. business also believes it is important to give economic development as many tools as they need. And part of that process is to get rid of some of the disincentives that are sitting out there, such as lowering the second highest capital gains tax, change the minimum wage requirements. You know, we have the second highest in the nation. Lower the high energy costs and high health care costs, also some of the highest in the nation. Now, I realize this bill doesn't do that, but when you start to talk about economic development, you've got to realize a lot of disincentives are out there that is part of what economic development has to deal with when they're trying to sell the state to a business. We think that's part of the process. Oregon depends on tax revenues to run public programs. The only way to get more for our budget is to have more people paying them. New taxpayers. We need jobs. House Bill 2011 is an important piece of the business growth and a better economy. This bill will make economic development work more effectively, and it will improve Oregon's ability to attract business as well as retain business. And we think when opportunities are made to make this bill, rewrite some of it and make it work, get the concepts together, that it will put economic development in the direction it needs to be, and that's job recruitment as well as retainment. Those are my comments for today. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Oh, thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Watt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Watt. I represent a group of businesses from Southern Oregon, not the least of which is the Chamber of Commerce. We would like you to know that we're extremely supportive of anything that creates sustainable family wage jobs. As has been said, we all realize the position we're in, and we'd certainly like to get out of that position. We'd also like you to know that down in Southern Oregon, we're actually doing some of the things that this bill encompasses. The ambassadors, we work with our regional development officer down there in a partnership with the city, with the county, with the private sector, in addition to the state. And we've formed those partnerships to do things in transportation and economic development. But obviously there always can be improvement. And if this bill can be crafted to bring those things, we're certainly supportive. I'd like to offer up just a couple of other comments. During the 90s, I had the honor to serve in this body as you serve right now. And I was fortunate enough to be able, sometimes it doesn't seem fortunate enough, to be able to chair a committee that addressed this issue back in 1993. And the idea was to make this department more efficient, which is exactly what we're talking about today. And I recall in those hearings, one of the things that we heard as a frustration that came out of the department was that in each successive legislative session, they were continually asked to do more or do something different or do it a different way or whatever it was. And as you can well imagine, those are the kinds of problems that caused. And I think that you're seeing the results of some of those kinds of things today. So as you approach this, you look hopefully to the degree that you can for the unintended consequences of the actions of the words that you pass on the paper. Because when they're reviewed, the review is taken for what the words are, not what the intent is. And if the words are clear, it doesn't even go to the intent. So hopefully we can all work together. Certainly we would like to have a seat at the table, as have many others have stated, to make this something that is very, very workable. The only concern that I will share with you that I can see on this today is on page 3, line 22, and that's using existing resources available. The scope of this, as has been presented, is very broad. And I would hope that if you're to move forward with this, and I understand certainly the Ways and Means, the one that makes the decision on this, if you're going to make the investment in order to get the return is directly to what investment is going to be made. So, good luck. Any help that we can be, we stand ready.
very good comment about. Yeah.
Any questions for Mr. White?
Thank you very much. John Chandler. You got about 8 minutes. No.
Piece of cake.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler with Legislative Advocates. I'm having the staff hand out copies of another bill for your reading pleasure. Those of you suffering from insomnia tonight, Senate Bill 467, the dash six amendments there too, should be printed in its engrossed version tomorrow or the next day. And the reason I'm handing that out is that we've been working on that bill with a large work group over on the Senate side, with the governor's office involved and a bunch of state agencies on those industrial lands issue. And in that bill are covered some of the same territory that's covered in House Bill 2011. And I call that to your attention. I talked with Mr. Anderson earlier today. I just got a copy of the amendments late this morning. I haven't really had a chance to digest them. I do know there's some areas where the bill I just had distributed to you and this bill cover similar ground but slightly differently. And obviously there's going to be the potential for conflicts, not legal conflicts in the sort that the Legislative Council are going to flag out, but policy conflicts. And that's just one example. In 467, work group from the interim identified the lack of an economic development strategy for the state as being critical, so we're calling for that to happen. In 2011, it appears that they're setting up regional strategies. Well, they could work together, but they could also work at cross purposes. That's something to just be aware of. Also in 467, we're setting up the Community Solutions Office in statute, Community Solutions team in statute, trying to put the windows in the silos so state agencies can work with each other. That looks somewhat similar to, but not the same as, the programs being identified here in this bill.
Is this your new guitar?
That's for you, John.
Yeah. You know, that's a beer, folks. And I find myself in kind of the anomalous situation here. This is obviously an important bill from a topic standpoint. My clients are exclusively businesses, most of them involved in the economic development or trying to be involved in economic development. We could fill this room and many others with horror stories and war stories and frustration stories about how difficult it is to get things done in this state. And you've all heard that. I'm not going to do that today. So I agree very much with the direction this bill is trying to go. And I also understand, and I've been doing this lobbying game quite a while, this is a very important bill for the Speaker. So I find myself in a difficult situation in that I don't think this bill gets us there. It needs a lot of work. And you've heard that from other witnesses. I'm not sure that by Monday we're going to have that work done. I'm not sure we can do it in ways and means. And the reason I say that, Madam Chair, I'm putting it on the record, and I hope I don't catch hell from this from anybody that I would rather not catch hell from, is I think we're trying to do too much in this bill. We've got supersiting, which has, as Representative Gallegos knows, its own set of issues associated with it. We're trying to do an ambassador's program, which I think is a dandy idea. It's a very good idea. That has a whole bunch of issues related to it. We're trying to set up the agency restructure, which has a whole bunch of issues with it. We're trying to reallocate responsibility for building codes and land use plan approvals and so on and so forth. But again, these may not be bad ideas, but we've got about five or six, I read it quickly, that are big lifts. And may well be worth doing, and maybe should be done, and maybe it'd be a good structure, but they're big lifts. And I'm asking you, and I hope I'm going to be speaking with the other proponents for the bill. I've not talked with them about it since I just saw this. That perhaps we could focus on pieces that are more that are doable, or with other bills. There's bills, as you may not be aware of yet, the 710 through 715 series coming out of Senate Judiciary. Dealing with building codes and reorganizing the building codes division and setting up some that's also somewhat duplicated in this bill. They've morphed. I'm not sure what exact flavor they're in right now, but they have some of the very same topics. So maybe there's some other issues out there we can work with and improve. Maybe there's pieces of this. I'm intrigued by this notion, frankly, of the ambassadors, of having somebody like the woman from Gresham was talking that can actually make things happen, whose job it is to make stuff happen. That might be worth pursuing. And my point is, that I absolutely am delighted. I've been doing this a while, like I said, and this is the first session, and it's because of the economy, I understand that. This is the first session we've had bipartisan, both chambers and the governor's office agreeing that economic development and the permitting process and the approval process and the land supply are critical issues that need to be addressed. So I'm absolutely ecstatic about that. I just don't believe that this bill has yet in the form that's going to move those issues in the way that I believe, from what I gather from the testimony, the proponents want it to do. So I'm absolutely willing to work, Madam Chair, members, this committee, another committee, work groups. It's an issue that my clients, from residential developers, commercial industrial developers, shopping center folks, others, have burning interest in. And we want to make sure what this body does and what gets sent to Ways and Means and what gets funded by the state is right. So with that, I'll take any questions you may have. Thank you for letting me impale myself on the record.
That phone call was a speaker's voice. Any questions for Mr. Chandler?
Thank you very much. Points well taken.
Anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 2011? I'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2011, and we will adjourn committee until Monday at 1.
the Senate Committee on Water and Land Use. The meeting date is April 30th, 2003. The time is 3 o'clock p.m. And the hearing room is the chair, Senator Perry. This is the Senate Committee on Water and Land Use. The meeting date is April 30th, 2003. The time is 3 o'clock p.m. in Hearing Room D. The chair is Senator Perry.